Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, folks, and welcome to Radio for Your Mind this Friday morning. I tell you what, I couldn't ask for a better Friday morning. It is a great way to go into the weekend. Got a boatload of stuff packed out. But this show today is going to be, just packed full of stuff. I don't even know if we're going to get through everything that I want to get through today. If we don't, then we're going to carry this over to Monday, because this may be, well, actually it is, the most important chapter in Tom Hopp's book on timeout winning strategies to win the game in life. And this one's called, Are Certain Plays Costing You the Game? Now, here's what Tom writes right in the very beginning. This chapter, more than any other, will help you change the course of your life. He goes on to say, I say this because you're about to get in the game and discover the 8 most important self-limiting beliefs that will just crank. And that's truly where we're at today. And I want every one of us to get out a pen and paper, to really focus on what I'm about to say. Because it's time to identify those limiting beliefs that are stopping you from going that one extra step, from fulfilling those dreams, fulfilling those passions, really just becoming a better person. He goes, as I mentioned, most of your ineffective results are rooted in beliefs that generally start with, I'm not, or a need to, or a fear of. Think about that. I'm not, a need to, or a fear of. And it goes back to what I said. We're either moving towards pleasure or we're moving away from pain. I mean, it's one of those two, and if we're looking backwards, fearing something, then we're not going to move near as fast or be near as focused as if we were moving forward towards that pleasure. But he goes on and he says, first and foremost, understand there is an underlying scarcity mentality supporting most, if not all, of the following 8 limiting beliefs that we're going to talk about. And folks, these are big. Number one, write this down. I don't trust. That's your first limiting belief. So ask yourself, at what point did you stop trusting other people? We didn't start out that way. So where at over time? What was the, and you don't have to do it now. Just think back. When did you stop trusting? I know for me, it started with my mom. I didn't trust my mom. She said she loved me. She said she cared. But then she would go beyond and above and beyond spanking. I didn't trust my dad because of things that I'd shared. I mean, and guys, back then I didn't know what this was, but I stopped trusting because he said he loved me, he said he cared, but then he would kick me, he would spank me, he would yell at me based on stuff that I had was out of my control. So when you analyze this, when you think about it, ask yourself where, when did you become suspicious, leery? That limiting belief that I had with trust carried over into most of the relationships I've ever had with females. The lack of trust with my dad ended when I went to boot camp and I understood a lot more about men and the psychological makeup. That's fine. Where did yours? See, at every level, trust has to play into it. And if we don't trust other people, then the odds are we don't trust ourselves. And when you stop trusting yourself, you basically shut down. You will self-sabotage. You got to figure out where did that happen? Maybe it was with that first girlfriend or first boyfriend. Maybe it was with your friend. You know, I told a story that when I decided to go to the Marine Corps, I called up my best friend in high school. He was in college, and I said, dude, I'm going to the Marines. He goes, you're not going to college? I said, no. And he goes, then you're not going to be worth crap. I thought, well, man, there's another relationship down the drain. But see, here's the kicker. Tom writes this. I love this. What's important is not what happened around the actual event. What's important is what you made it mean, the story you wrote, and the effect that it has on your belief system around trust. You've got to tweak it. You got to know what it is. So number one is, I don't trust. Now, it's interesting because here's something that he says, and man, we're going to try to get through all these, and if we don't, like I said, we're going to carry it over until Monday. But here's the first one. Listen to this. When you don't trust, it affects your emotions, your relationships. you know, maybe your mother and father left the family when you were just a kid and you got a divorce. Maybe you snuck out of the house when you were a kid and drank and smoked, and now you don't trust your own kids. Maybe you've been cheated before by the woman or the man that you love, so now you don't trust men or women. When you don't trust it, it affects your health. It affects your physical being. I've never been able to stick to a diet or an exercise regime. I don't trust my commitment. I've been misdiagnosed more than once. I don't trust doctors. I'm not seeing results fast enough. I don't trust my trainer. See how this goes? Maybe it's mental and physical. I loaned money to a friend and they never paid me back. I don't trust people when it comes to money. I find out that I overpaid for my last car. I can't trust salespeople. A colleague of mine took credit for my idea at work. I don't trust anybody in the... See how this works? Oh, how about this one? Spiritual and faith. My spiritual leader has caught in a scandal. Now I can't trust the Pope, the pastor, the priest. A tragic event happened to me and my family. Now I don't trust God. I won't tithe as much because I don't trust what the people are doing with the money. Write down under I don't trust. How has this affected you and your emotions, your relationship, your mental and financial state, your physical and your health, your spiritual, your faith? How has that affected you? Write that down under each one of these eight that we're going to talk about so that you can self-diagnose, you can look at where you're at. The second of the eight limiting beliefs is, I'm not worried, or no, I'm not worthy. See, I'm not worthy, Tom writes this, listen, I'm not worthy is a deep-seated program that runs many people at the same level in their life. I can be very obvious or very, it can be very obvious or very subtle. This play anchors a thought that you are so unworthy that there isn't a possibility of reaching your goals and dreams. Listen, this is one of the worst things that I've ever seen, but I've talked to so many women who have come out of battered homes. They've come out of the sex trade. They've come out of some type of abusive situation. And they say, but I'm not worthy of that. This is all that I'm worthy of. This is all that I'm made of. This is just the life that I'm going to live. I've seen men who have been in relationships where their wives have cheated on them with other men or women. They said, maybe this is all. This is because of the sins of my past. See, this paradigm could have stemmed from an innocent experience at school when your teacher gave special attention to somebody else. It could stem from your parents, where you felt like your brother or your sister. See, in my case, my dad always told me, we don't have money for you to go to college. We don't have money for you to go to school. But yet they found money for my brother to go to one of the best colleges out there. All this can line up. It's amazing when you start going through this, you realize how it affects you as that person. Listen to what Tom writes here. When running an I'm not worthy play, you operate your life on the probability meter. The possibility meter doesn't even exist. But what if growing up, your mom and dad only drove used cars? If worthiness is an issue today, then you won't even look at a new car. Think about that for a second. What life story has affected you on the I'm not worthy? That's a big one, folks. You got to write that down. Remember, you got to cover the emotional side, relationships, how this affected you, mental or financial, physical or health, or your spiritual or your faith. The third limiting belief, and this is big here. Fear of failure. See, fear of failure is a play that literally can paralyze most people from ever making an attempt on their goals and their dreams. The fear of failure is what gives us that paralysis of analysis. It's the play that we should be on, the focus we should be on, is generally never going to happen because we've attached a past event where we failed or we perceived that we failed. Tom writes this, in reality, it's just one event that did not look the way you expected it to. However, the emotional impact of the event felt so bad that you created a play around it, keeping you from possibly ever attempting anything like it again. Man, that's what sucks. How many of us have somewhere in our life played out of the fear of failure. Relationships we could have had are no longer there. Financial success that we had, no longer there. The plan that we should have passed on to the boss, but we didn't. And now somebody else got promoted over us. Think about that. I mean, that's the craziest thing, but when you analyze it, it's so true. See, that's what gets me. Whenever I'm going through these, I realize, wow, this will blow your mind. Let's look at the fourth one. This may freak you out.
Hey, Troy, hold on a second.
Yeah, buddy.
I want you to backtrack for a second, because you were touching on the concept of being unworthy, and you gave a couple of examples there. A lot of times, people carry baggage from situations with their family, and I see this all the time in flight training, because we have a lot of students who come through this program not chasing their own dream, but chasing a dream of a family member, someone who really wanted this for them, or, you know, wanted it themselves and was unable to attain it for some reason. And chasing dreams that are not your own can be a very dangerous thing. But I couldn't help but focus on what you said about your brother and yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to drive home a point on this one, because being a parent, being a mentor to others and everything, oftentimes the example that you quoted, I don't think it was about them not having or being able to create the money as much as they believed in your self-reliance more than they believed in his self-reliance.
Well, that's a possibility.
And, you know, the problem with that is we all tend to look for negatives in things. Don't waste a second, folks, focusing on the negative. The negative will kill you. It will prevent you from accomplishing things. It creates those self-limiting beliefs. Focus on the positive. Look at it in the light of, you know, they did this for him because they had more faith in me and my ability to do it on my own. Think about how much more empowering just that one spin of psychological perception can be, and how empowering that can be in helping you to focus on the possibilities and moving.
Did we lose you?
I'm here.
Oh, say that last part again. The phone clicked out.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said, you know, the key is to focus on how empowering the possibilities are when you look at it from the standpoint of they believed strong enough in me that they knew that I could do it, and there was more self-reliance in me than there was in another family member.
There you go.
They had more faith in me. And the psychological and emotional empowerment that comes in when you look at something in a different light as opposed to a pity, you know, or a spirit of scarcity mentality as opposed to spirit of abundance mentality. It's amazing what a difference that little perception can make.
It's huge. You know, and that brings us right into the fourth limiting belief, which is the fear of success. And it's funny, Tom writes in here, to those who have a fear of success belief, the possibility of achievement is all too real. The fear of success has less to do with a person's ability to achieve success and more to do with the judgment, the expectation, the scrutiny that comes along with the success. Now, folks, think about that. How many of you have been right at the pinnacle? You're there. Maybe you offered the job promotion. Maybe you were right there and getting ready to put the next volume in your downline. And all of a sudden, you pulled back. You didn't want that success. The fear of what happens after you have the success Tom writes this, there are all kinds of reasons and excuses, but none are based on fact. They are simply self-imposed judgments based on experiences that we've had or an event that we've witnessed where someone was criticized and you decided you would not put yourself in that position. Folks, I get that all the time. Matter of fact, I had a situation yesterday where I was on the phone with several CEOs of some of the most popular wireless companies in MLM. And we were on that call for a specific reason, because I had called that call together because I saw something happening in the background. I saw a person or an organization trying to sabotage several companies at once, and I could not place my finger on it until late last night why that was taking place. And here's what we looked at. By putting this together, all of a sudden we found out that there was somebody in the background that had the fear of success, and they were trying to bring down all these other companies so that they wouldn't be the one that was judged if these companies failed. And see, when you start to analyze, when you start to see, when you start to realize that there's something here that we all go through, and you can write down and you can get a grip on how's this limiting belief affecting me emotionally? How's it affecting me financially? How's it affecting my health? How's it affecting my faith, my spiritual walk? All of a sudden, you can have a breakthrough. Tom writes this, the fear of success is a close cousin to the worthiness, the fear of worthiness play, because in reality, people have a deep-seated belief around not being worthy of success in the first place. Now think about that one for a second, because if you have this fear of being worthy, if you don't feel like you're worthy, then the odds are, if you become successful and you haven't broke through that, if you haven't got rid of that scarcity mentality, you'll self-sabotage. I know a gentleman who has been at the top. He went from zero to a millionaire and lost it all. And as I self-analyze, if I'm outside looking in and I'm reading Tom's book, I say, wow, part of this had to do with the fact that he still today doesn't feel that he's worthy for good relationships and good stuff like that. Folks, you got to work through it is what you have to do. Number five, I am not deserving. This one, this is, wow. Tom writes this. With I'm not deserving, you may be busy talking and planning about playing a bigger game in life or even busy working at it. However, in the end, you just wind up short of your goals time after time. And when you dig deep, you realize that you have this underlying limiting belief that says, I don't deserve. Now, I can tell you, sometimes I went through that. It's like, man, I see people around me. I see sometimes some of my boys going through that. It's a limiting belief. You've got to break through some of this stuff. You know, when you have this limiting belief of I'm not deserving, you go right up to it. You do just enough to where you're almost there. You do just enough, but then something happens to where, you know, you back off and you don't get that promotion. You blow the interview. You turn in the paperwork late on purpose, whatever the case is. See, this is sad because at the end, it's a debilitating play that is entrenched with not enough. It's entrenched with I'm not going to give it my all. Think about this for a second because Jimmy's with us today. What would it be like if Jimmy just taught all of his pilots just enough to fly the Apache helicopter, and they were good at it? I mean, he honed their skills so much that, man, just wherever they turned their eyes, it never failed. They hit the target every time, and they were the best of the best, but he left out one crucial part of that, and that was how to land it. They can take it off, they can fly it, but he says, okay, I'm bailing, and I'm not going to teach you how to land it. They'd fail the course. They'd die in some places. See, that's what happens when I'm not deserving. We self-sabotage. We short it. We have this mediocrity type of personality. It all these limiting beliefs come together. Here's what Tom says. Ponder this for a second. somewhere in your past, you created a belief about yourself that no matter what your lot in life was or who you've become, you decide that you don't deserve any better. Maybe you either experienced firsthand or witnessed others going after what they wanted only to fall short. You know, I watched my dad. My dad was one of the, I mean, he succeeded so much in the Teamsters Union and what he was doing, but when he went to network marketing, he couldn't do it. My mom succeeded, but my dad couldn't. And for years, I thought, man, maybe I'm like my dad. Maybe I can't make this happen. Then I started looking at some of these other big gurus out there. One of my early mentors and somebody I adore today, Todd Falcone. Man, he could get on the telephone and bring people in like crazy. He taught Mark Weezer to bring 30, 40 people in a month, personal. I had a hard time just getting people to answer the phone. I had to work through that I'm not deserving aspect. Number 6, the need to look good. Tom writes, the need to look good gives off the appearance that you have it all together. It is certainty masks and portrays that you're in control, that everything's rocking, regardless of the reality. It is purely ego-driven. Man, here's the sad thing, though. I think it's ego-driven through a fear of insecurity. What if I let my guard down? What if I screw up? You know what? This is definitely not one of mine. I can tell you that right now. Because I don't care what people think or what people say. I'll do a video, and sometimes I screw that up and have to apologize or it's just awful or whatever. But I know people out there that don't ever want that. They want to be number one, looking good, have people love them, never have people criticize them. They want to make sure everybody thinks that everything's okay. And you know what? This is what pisses me off with this. I see this in network marketing with this little phrase. Take the negatives up, take the positives down, just pretend everything's okay till the day we jump ship. You know what? That is a lack of leadership, 100%. If you care about people, you're going to work through this limiting belief. The need to look good is a protection play. It supports your ego in who you think you are. Thus, your behavior has to match your ego. But I'm going to tell you something. People will soon find very quickly that you're just blowing smoke, that that's not really who you are. Number 7, the fear of looking bad. See how these build on each other? It blows my mind. See, the fear of looking bad is about the fear of not knowing what the outcome of your actions will be. It's the fear of taking the risks. It's about sticking out in a crowd and feeling judged. You know, there's a gentleman that has a reason to go through this. His name's Sherman Unkeford. Sherman, when he was young, had been through the savings and loan debacle. He had sold his bank, and then all of a sudden everything tore apart, and he was charged with embezzlement, charged with crimes, all this stuff. If anybody had a reason to fear looking bad, it was Sherman Unkeford. But 6-7 years ago now, he took a risk. He was in his late 50s at the time, about 60 years old or so. He looked at his wife, Sharon, and he said, you know what, there's this little bitty company starting up called Zango. They're about a year old. Let's give it a shot. This will be his third round in network marketing. And Sharon said, okay, let's do it. Well, 5 out of the 6 years that Zango's been in operation, Sherman Unkeford has been their number one earner. He faced that music. Even after his wife passed away, Sherman at 65 has continued to go out there and lead by example. He's gone out there, even though there's things on the internet that people could look at and say, well, aren't you a crook? He never feared looking bad. Folks, we've got to get over the fear of looking bad. Okay, you've got to move forward. What's interesting about this, Tom writes this, listen to this. The fear doesn't even have to be attached to a past failure. It may just be a past experience where you were judged, laughed at, or mocked at for creating a result that was not in alignment with somebody else's beliefs. I'll give you some examples. I remember having to get up in the front of the classroom in high school, in English class, and quote a Shakespeare play. I was nervous. I was sweating. I stumbled over the words. My teacher's name was Pitzenbarger. After that day where she humiliated me in class, her name became Mrs. Pitts. And I made her life so miserable that when my brother went through high school, she demanded that he not be in her class. But that stuck with me. I did not do public appearances or anything again until I was about 21, 22 in Primerica, where I had been asked to speak at an event. And although I was still scared and still a little sweaty, definitely wet behind the ears, I broke through that barrier at the time. When I was done speaking, my voice was cracking. I got an applause, not ridicule. I was able to break through that limiting belief that I had. Not everybody is going to be a public speaker, but listen to me. If you have this fear of looking bad, you need to break through it. Everybody at one time looks bad. I guarantee you, when I hit boot camp, I looked awful. I mean, really bad. We have to break through this if we're going to make it. It's the only way. Number 8, the need to be right. This is the granddaddy of them all. Here's what Tom writes. The need to be right. In the first part of this book, I suggested there's no such thing as right, wrong, good, or bad. There are, however, some people who are so invested in the need to be right that they will argue their point to the end of the earth. Or if they feel that they're not winning the argument, they'll just shut down and take their toys and go home.
Troy, stop for a second.
Go ahead.
Stop. This is a really important point that I want to beat this like a dead horse so that, you know, and I'm talking specifically to the guys right now. Guys, one of the most valuable lessons that I have ever learned when it comes to a relationship with my lovely wife is I would rather be happy than right. Let me say that one more time. I would rather be happy than right. Now, when you get hung up on the point of who's right and wrong, it's real easy to create unnecessary conflict and animosity in any relationship. But the one that matters the most in our lives is the one with our significant other. And if I can give you one piece of advice, and Troy's been married a lot longer than I am, you know, so I'm going to let him echo this point because I think he's going to share the same sentiment with me on this. If we take philosophy to our relationship with our significant other and then bring it full circle back to our relationship with our prospects, our clients, our customers, our business associates, and use the 101 philosophy that Troy has adapted from the one and only John Maxwell, and I'm going to let him reiterate on that because he said does such a great job of it. But I think if you focus on happy as opposed to right and embrace the 101 philosophy, 101% philosophy, you can change the dynamics of your life dramatically. Sorry, Troy. I had to stick that in there, man.
No, you got it, guys. And listen, think about this. It all narrows down to what Jim's saying, especially when you look at this in a relationship, any relationship. It goes down to the benefits and the prices. If we take this down to our significant other, which I think is a phenomenal way of looking at this, then what you end up doing, and for you that we're going to go over our time. So, folks, if you know, thanks for being on radio for your mind. Be on Aces Radio Live tonight. We got Tommy Chenault going to be on there and have a great weekend. But folks, for you that are still hanging out on the call, listen to me here. It narrows down to the benefits and the prices we pay. If you take what Jim just said with your significant other, if you stop trying to be right, you try to be happy, you take the 101% rule where you find 1% of what your significant other is saying that you can agree with in that moment, you give it 100% of your effort, the benefit is you're probably going to sleep in the same bed with them, and it's going to be a nice, warm bed. I'm not talking about, you know, lovey-dovey. I'm just talking about a nice, emotional, warm bed. But if you go for being right The price you're going to pay is you may still sleep in the same bed, but it will be as icy cold as if you were in the Arctic North. It's not about being right. It's not about being wrong. It's about the willingness to listen and help move the relationship forward, whether it's personal or in business, whether it's you inside. Because if you're wrapped up in the I've got to be right syndrome, you're going to end up being a very lonely individual, because eventually the only person that's ever going to be right is you. And your kids won't want to be around you, your significant other, your wife, your lover, your mom, your dad, your downline, your upline, nobody will want to be around you. And that's what we don't want to see happen. Folks, listen, this afternoon, Aces Radio Live, we have the one and only Tom Chenault, host of the Home-Based Business Radio Show. We may have some guests on the show with Tom, but this is a man that I have grown to love. He's like a big brother to me. He helped me get started in radio. He introduced me to Jim Gilhouse. The rest has been history, but there's not a day goes by that he doesn't reach out to me in an email or in a telephone call or Facebook somehow. And he says three very, very important words. I love you. This man loves, for an A-plus personality, he tells people he loves them more than anybody I know. You do not want to miss this show this afternoon, 5 p.m. Central, Aces Radio Live. Folks, have an awesome weekend. Be back here Monday morning, where we're going to go into Chapter 11. This has been a phenomenal book, The Championship Plays. Then Time Out, Tom Hopp's book. You don't want to miss it. Folks, live life like it's an epic adventure. Jimmy and I will see you Monday morning back here, Radio for Your Mind. Bye now.
God bless, everybody. Have a great weekend. We'll see you this afternoon on Aces Radio Live, 5 to 6 Central.